Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. The Annie Fry Show YouTube live chat poll of the day is sponsored by Ruler Foods. Low prices, no coupons. Ruler Foods.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. American
Ride. All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
Don't get me wrong, I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Happy Earth Day. Today, I'm reminded of the work we must do to protect our future generations and continue the historic progress we're making. It starts with my Inflation Reduction Act, the most significant investment in climate, clean energy, and environmental justice ever. It builds on our global leadership. After we rejoined the Paris Agreement, set standards to cut pollution, quadrupled the number of electric vehicles sold, and sparked the U.S. manufacturing boom that's created 270,000 clean energy jobs and counting. And today, for the first time, Americans can apply to join my American Climate Corps, so everyone has a pathway to a clean energy career. And we're also announcing a $7 billion award through the Solar for All program to cut utility bills for nearly 1 million low-income households. Folks, we're making progress, and we're just getting started. On Earth Day, let's remember there's nothing, nothing beyond our capacity when we act together.
Well, I'll tell you my favorite thing about that little PSA there is the music. It's real catchy behind it. And it is amazing to me that in a pre-produced thing that it's still hard to understand what the President of the United States is saying. But I did hear him saying investment, investment, investment. And I did hear him say that he would cut utility bills. And I wonder if he'll cut utility bills like he cut gas prices. Remember, it was $2.39 on his first day in office. And now we're paying $4 a gallon here. We'll see how he handles all of this. Happy Earth Day, Stephen Moore. I know this is a big day. A big day. You like green. I like green. It's a different kind of green, I think. But we're grateful to have you here to talk a little economics. Thank you for being here from the Heritage Foundation. The president is doing a lot of investment. Where is he getting the money and what's the payoff?
Well, good to be with you, Annie. And before we get into that, I do want to say something about Earth Day, because a lot of school children and a lot of Americans don't realize this. But, you know, today in America, we have the cleanest air and cleanest water we've ever had in the history of this country. And so, you know, we have created a better environment, and it's a real, you know, it's been a real triumph, you know, back in the, and by the way, most people are probably surprised to hear that. Most people think, oh, probably 50 years ago, the air was cleaner than it is today. No, it's much, much cleaner today. And that's despite the fact that we've become the industrial powerhouse of the world. So that's something to celebrate. And I'm talking, by the way, when I talk about clean air, I'm talking about real pollutions. Those are things like carbon monoxide, lead, sulfur, particulates in the air that can make you sick. And, you know, cause problems breathing for people with asthma. Carbon monoxide is a pollution. Carbon dioxide is not a pollution. So I wanted to stress that point. Where is all this money coming from for all these green energy projects? Well, we're borrowing trillions of dollars. We keep spending money on green energy. In fact, I was just on Fox just before I came on your show and made this point that we spend tens and hundreds of billions of dollars on these green energy projects, and yet we're still using record amounts of fossil fuels. Why? Because fossil fuels are much more efficient ways of getting energy. I mean, there's a reason that 200 years ago we stopped using windmills, right? Because they're not a very smart way to get electricity. What made our industrial revolution in this country possible, it's a little history lesson for folks, is when we, you know, we had the steam engines and things like that. How were those powered? Not with windmills, not with sun panels, but with oil, gas, and coal. And we should be using all the energy that we have. Every, you know, whether it's nuclear, whether it's oil, gas, coal, in some cases solar, hydropower, because I'm sick and tired of having to get oil and gas from, you know, foreign.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to be not important for this administration to manage the oil reserves that we have, the strategic reserves. They are played with in order to, it's always circa the election time. It's tap into that so gas prices can get lower. We're paying about $4 a gallon here on the Missouri-Illinois border, $2.39 on day one.
Yep.
How does he explain that to his voters who are saying, you want to lower my utility bills? My gas bill is outrageous.
So, first of all, the gas price was $2.50 a gallon when Trump left office. And around the country, it's about $3.69, $3.79. I think you said you pay $4. And,
$4.
And I was in California last week. They pay about $6 a gallon. But so, you know, the energy crisis here happened because as soon as Biden came in, remember the first thing he did was kill the pipeline that we need to transport our oil and gas, which makes it more expensive. But this point, you made another point, and I want to address this about, you know, Biden saying that utility bills will be lower. No, they won't. If you look at states and cities that have requirements of using certain amounts of green energy, like 50%, 60%, 80%, the states with the strictest requirements that they get their energy and electric power from wind and solar, those have utility prices for homeowners and businesses that are about twice as high as those that just use the free market and use the best, whether it's gas or coal or nuclear. You know, so it's not true that this is going to cut utility bills. Will make them more expensive.
Mm. You know, I just because it's Earth Day, and I know that there is a lot of money, it's a big industry, a very lucrative industry for people to get into the green energy game. There's a clip that I play every chance I get. This is from February 16th of 2023. And this is Senator Kennedy, because they're asking for $50 trillion or something. There's this outrageous number that Senator Kennedy was throwing out there when he was talking about the ability to lower the world temperature. Just listen to this here.
If we spend $50 trillion to make the United States of America carbon neutral by 2050, how much will that lower world temperatures?
I can't answer that because we don't know what China and India and the rest of the globe has done.
Okay. Have you heard anybody from the Biden administration say how much it will lower world temperatures?
No.
Does anybody know how much it will lower world temperatures? No.
The $50 trillion with a T, that is funny money's funny money. To think we could invest that much and we couldn't even have a range of what we could do. And then we realize who owns our debt. And you talk about what China and India and so on and so forth are going to do or not do. Is this just a political game that is being played? Is there green energy to invest in that's smart for a progressive future? How do you look at the investments that need to be made and the ones that are being made to be political?
Well, we should let the free market work here, and we should use whatever energy sources make the most sense from a, you know, look, countries that we use energy so that we can be productive and produce things that, you know, our schools, our churches, our factories, our cars, we need energy. And so I think that we should be letting, you know, whatever is the most economical, use that. When energy prices rise, it raises the prices of everything. you know, that we have, the food that we eat, the computers we use. Don't forget how much power is being used by the internet. And don't forget that this new next generation of artificial intelligence, it uses massive amounts of energy. So we're going to need a lot of energy in the future. And the estimate that I'd seen, by the way, in answer to that question the senator was asking, is that in 50 years, we may be able to reduce the global temperature by about 0.07 degrees. So that means instead of, let's say, the world temperature being 60 degrees, it's going to be 59.93 degrees. Oh, that's going to save the planet.
$50 trillion worth?
Right? No, it's unbelievable. Yeah. You made this point. I want to repeat it. They call it the green movement, not because it's green as in, you know, the environment being green. It's green because they want the green stuff. They want the money. It's all about the money. We have built a massive climate change industrial complex in this country. And a lot of people are getting really, really, really rich off of it. But it's not changing the planet once whatsoever.
Last question before we let you go. We're speaking with Steve Moore, Distinguished Fellow in Economics at the Heritage Foundation. You are an economic advisor to Donald Trump. How much of his economic plan surrounds what he does as the president via energy?
Are you talking about Trump or Biden?
Trump.
Oh, Trump.
Yes.
Well,
it'd be a little different than that.
I guarantee you he's going to be all in on American energy. We're going to produce, we're going to build the pipelines, we're going to build the LNG terminals, we're going to drill, we're going to build nuclear power plants, we're going to bring back clean coal, because that's, you know, still a big part of it. Where possible, we'll use clean energy, but we're not going to mandate it. We're going to make it compete. You know, people want to buy an electric car. Your God-given right is to buy whatever car you want, but we're not going to mandate it. We're going to get rid of all these mandates that say you have to buy an electric vehicle, because guess what? 80% of Americans don't want an electric vehicle.
Yeah, and as the companies have to work to make the electrical vehicle more attractive to consumers, they'll just get better and better.
There you go.
Steve Moore, thank you. We appreciate it. Happy Earth Day. We appreciate having you on the show.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye. He is a Distinguished Fellow in Economics at the Heritage Foundation, a Trump economic advisor, and he wrote the book on it, GovZilla, How the Relentless Growth of Government is Devouring Our Economy and Our Freedom. Go get a copy of that and check it out. Grateful to have Steve Moore with us there. I want to take a break here. We're going to have Jason Chaffetz come on the show with us. I've got a lot to talk to him about, but those spending bills that are passing in the House, you got a Republican majority by, I think, 2 seats right now. Off the top of my head, I think there are 5 seats that are vacant but will be filled before the November election via special elections. I think that that's the number. So it's kind of a fluid situation. What does the Republican Party need to do right now to get through November to make sure that they actually have a functioning majority come January, when we hopefully have a Republican president? And I also want to ask Jason Chaffetz what he thinks about the disruption with the Marjorie Taylor Greene, the motion to vacate, the one person can pull the ripcord and make the whole thing happen. What would Jason Chaffetz advise the House Republicans to do? Well, he'll tell us on The Annie Fry Show when we return. We'll be right back.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Sell out of America today. When we had members of Congress in there waving the Ukrainian flag on the United States House of Representatives floor, while we're doing nothing to secure our border, I think every American in this country should be furious. Who's going to vote for these people? How can you vote for these people? They don't serve our country.
Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to be heard, of course, and she has been the one who's been toying with the motion to vacate. Speaker Johnson, just need one. The Matt Gaetz of this current situation seems to be MTG. And she's saying that the $95 billion of foreign aid that was passed individually for Ukraine, Israel, and the Indo-Pacific is a sellout of the country. And a lot of this from the outside looking in looks like drama, drama, drama. We have our principles. We know what we want to be funded. But it gets into the House with such a narrow majority. and becomes very complicated to see the forest for the trees. I'm going to bring on our guest who's hopefully going to straighten some of this out for us. Jason Chaffetz is a Fox News contributor, and I also very much encourage you to check out his book, The Puppeteers. He's the former chairman of the House Oversight Committee, and you can learn more at jasoninthehouse.com. Jason, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you here to talk about this today.
Hey, thanks, Annie. Always good to be with you.
Thank you. I want to give you the opportunity to react just in general on the aid passage that took place this weekend. Mike Johnson managed to get the job done. Marjorie Taylor Greene, of course, very frustrated with the manner that they went through and then the passage of some of this spending. Is this just drama on the outside looking in? Is this how the sausage is made? What do you think?
It is how the sausage is made, but I don't like the outcome. I mean, there are some very important things to deal with and push back on Russia and China and Iran. You know, you can be supportive of Israel and Ukraine, but I think the other thing is securing our own border and securing the United States of America. So if you have that array of choices that are before you, I believe securing our border it should be the number one priority. Everything else is secondary. If you don't protect your border, you don't have a country, you're going to lose this country. And so you have to protect that border. So in the final package, when you couple them all together, if it doesn't have border security, I wouldn't vote for that. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of respect for people who support the funding for Israel and support Ukraine and do all that. But I really think you have to also understand that Democrats will not come to the table. Democrats are the ones that will not fund securing our border. They do not want policies in place that lock down that border. And so I wish that Marjorie Taylor Greene would spend as much time talking about Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats as she did about Republicans. And I think that would go over a lot better than the way it's been going over so far.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We're speaking with former Congressman Jason Chaffetz, Fox News contributor and author. I don't understand how we can't be primarily, as an entire Republican Party, focus primarily on the border and force the hand of the people who are in the minority, even if it's a teeny tiny minority or it's a huge minority, if you can have such a thing. I've talked to current congressmen on this show, and they say, you know, we passed H.R. 2. They've sent it over. Chuck Schumer doesn't want to do anything about it. How does it work in the House when you've got an Israel funding bill or Ukraine or Indo-Pacific, whatever it is? How do you make it so that you reemphasize border security as a priority over these other things that are, yes, still important?
Well, they did that, and the House has passed important legislation. And let's remember, it was Joe Biden and Kamala Harris that issued nearly 100 executive orders undoing what Donald Trump had done. And so, again, I think 100% of the blame on the lack of security at our border, the reason we're not impeaching Secretary Mayorkas, the reason the border is not locked down, is 100% because of the Democrats. That is their position, and they are lockstep. You find one that's willing to break ranks, you're not going to find them. That is core to their position. And so, you know, I don't think Speaker Johnson is the problem. We had a sort of unofficial rule when I was in the House, when we were in the majority, and that is if the majority of the majority want to have something brought up, then you bring it up for a vote. And if you lose that vote, you lose that vote. But, you know, you try as best you can to make the case. What I don't find, what I find about Marjorie Taylor Greene is she's failing at her job. She is not persuasive. You know, our founders set it up such, Annie, that they want you to be as persuasive as possible. No one person gets their thing. You can rant and rave and post all you want on Instagram, but if you're not able to persuade others to the position that you see, you're going to ultimately be a failure. And that's the way I see what she's doing so far.
We're speaking with former Congressman Jason Chaffetz. When you're saying be persuasive, I'm very interested in this. Are you probably maybe it's both, but are you talking about persuading her coworkers there in Congress? Are you talking about at this point now just persuading voters to make sure that we get a bigger majority so that we have a little more breathing room? Because it does feel very much so like some of the people who turn into influencers once they get into politics, It doesn't feel so much like they're trying to move the ball down the court. They just want to make sure that they're in the spotlight while the drama is going on. And I don't really know where MTG is on that on any particular issue. I got to pay close attention each and every time. But where do you want to see the persuasion happening?
With other members of Congress. Look, when I was in Congress, Barack Obama was the president almost the entire time. I passed 7 substantive bills. You can't do it unless you're able to persuade some Democrats to come along with you. Look, the whole of the Republicans has got to continue to beat the drum and remind people every single step of the way. The reason our border isn't secure is because of Democrats. And again, our founders didn't envision that you had to have the best Instagram following. They wanted you to have to fight for something and persuade other members of Congress to go your way. That's what it's ultimately about. That's why there are 435 members and there's 100 senators. It's not, if you wanted a glide path to just get what one person's done, you'd have a different form of government. So you can rail. Look, I'm not saying where I take issue with her is to suggest that this is a Speaker Johnson's fault. It's not. That is where the body is as a whole. And it's a problem. And Republicans, if they want to do better, they have to go out and win elections.
Yeah. And I think that Speaker Johnson, being somebody who we all had to study when he took the speakership, because he wasn't as widely known as maybe Kevin McCarthy right. had been or others. It's hard to look at him and see how he could possibly make any decision that won't offend somebody on one side or the other always. To enter into that motion to vacate. So how is it that the Republican majority does go through these final months where they still either A, have the majority, or B, before they lose it? How do they function this way if it's always, if you offend one person, they're going to be out and then we're going to have to go through that circus again?
Well, I thought Kevin McCarthy did all of us a really real disservice when he agreed to allow the rules package to have the motion to vacate at just one member. Mm. I tend to think it should be bigger. I mean, I called that out at the time. I think that should be maybe 10% of the majority, make it like 24 members. If 24 members come together and they want to, have another vote on who the speaker is, that's great. But one member, that seems extreme. And I think until they change that, they're going to continue to have this problem. Remember, Democrats can pull this up at any time that they want as well. Republicans, the last few months here of this election, it really is about messaging. Nothing, I think, outside of what just passed of any substance will pass the body. It's going to be about the next election. And so you better be good on your messaging and getting out the vote if you actually want to persuade people and be able to have a mandate to come in and change things. And I think I would have voted no on the final package, because unless it had border security as the number one item, I'm a no.
Right.
And I think they should have held the line, in my opinion. But I don't blame Speaker Johnson for that.
Okay, Jason Chaffetz with us right now. Your book is The Puppeteers, The People Who Control the People Who Control America. And it becomes even more interesting as we get closer to this election. You can kind of tell when someone's getting a little close to being over the target and the people who get all ruffled up. We've watched President Trump today. He spoke after the first half day of the trial and his hush money trial in Manhattan. But of course, those legal issues are all over the place. And it's kind of hard to campaign and message right now outside of Donald Trump. But it does seem like the biggest threat that Donald Trump would be, should he get reelected, is to the people who control the people who control America. It seems as though he is a threat to that. I wanted to know what you think about the lawfare that's taking place right now and what a second term of his presidency might mean for the bureaucracy that's in place.
Well, look, the voters got to see Donald Trump for 4 years, and all these things that the Democrats said about, oh, he'd create all these world wars and the economy would be real bad. And he'd do this, that, and he'd spy on his opponents. Well, that's what the Democrats have essentially done. I mean, that's what we got with Joe Biden. The whole promise of Joe Biden has just been a lie. It's just been fiction. He was going to unite the country. So I think the Democrats are going to pay a political price for the lawfare that they've been engaged with. I think they've overreached. I don't think the average person walking down the streets of St. Louis can tell you why in the world Donald Trump is involved in a trial right now. Like, what did he do that was so egregious and bad that he might go to jail? I mean, nobody can even tell you. The prosecution has a hard time telling you what that is. So people understand that it's an overreach. It's politically motivated. And why is it coming up now? Mm-hmm. Just happens to be 5-6 months before an election. Yeah, right. What a coincidence. These things happened like so many years ago. Before the 2016 election. Now it's coming up? Come on.
Yeah, I've said this before, but I don't think we're as stupid as they need us to be in a lot of these scenarios. Last question before we let you go. We're speaking with Jason Chaffetz. I encourage you to check out his book, The Puppeteers. It's a really interesting read, and you'll learn a lot. But I wonder, you've been very close to, you know, how the sausage is made, to use that former reference, in Washington, D.C., and I feel like when Donald Trump is the president, you're getting Donald Trump's administration. When Joe Biden's been the president, I don't feel like he's in command. There's a lot of, I guess, har-har ways that you could explain that he doesn't seem to be in charge of his faculties or the country. But are those puppeteers, do they have a bigger job in the Biden administration than maybe they've ever had before?
Well, I think you're seeing why they like him to be there, because all he really wants to do is get his next scoop of ice cream. And so they can run amok, you know, and, you know, the book talks about people like the money managers and Larry Fink and Susan Rice and these people behind the scenes that are able to do things that maybe they wouldn't be able to otherwise do. And so when you start to understand how they use money and not-for-profits and unions and Randy Weingarten at the teachers union, how they're able to get their way, there's a whole lot of reason why there's support for Joe Biden, even though he's not a really good negotiator. He has a hard time negotiating his way up a set of stairs.
That's true. So, that's facts.
And so, you know, but they like him there, because he is this puppet, and you know, the guy can't debate. He won't even go on the Super Bowl with a free opportunity to talk to $100 million people. Mm-hmm. He can't do it. He just simply cannot do the job. So I think the country has a clear choice, even though he's all being wrapped up in the election. I still don't think that. I think America sees that. I like the way you phrased that, Annie. I think that was a really good way to phrase that.
We're not as stupid as they need us to be. Maybe close on some days. I don't know, but I just don't. I have faith in America, and I pray about it a lot. So I need some resolve there. Jason Chaffetz, thank you for being with us. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Annie.
We'll talk to you again. Bye-bye. Go check out his book, The Puppeteers, The People Who Control the People Who Control America. And got a Liz Warren and an Adam Schiff, Joe Biden, Schumer, Kamala Harris on the front cover of his book. And if you want to know how things go in Washington, D.C., and learn a little bit of the background and those names specifically, he does name names. It's a wonderful book to check out. It's called The Puppeteers by Jason Chaffetz. All right. That is the guests of the show. Now we're going to unpack some other things when we come back. I want to talk about the protests that are taking place. Michael Rappaport, this guy, like, if there was a, what do you call the first patient? Patient zero?
Patient zero.
Of TDS?
Yeah.
It might have been Rappaport.
Uh-huh.
He was not a Trump guy.
Not at all.
I don't think that he's completely gotten over that, but he has some sense about him that is coming out. And he, I don't know that it has to do specifically today with Donald Trump, but he is out there speaking in the streets of New York City and speaking to the American public in support of Jewish people. Like, what kind of world are we living in right now where we need to go out and say this? Well, if you've been watching what's going on our college campuses, we should all be going out and saying it. Michael Rappaport made quite a speech, and we're going to play that for you. You can watch it with us, too, on the Annie Fry YouTube channel when we come back. Don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What you saw at Columbia University is open support for Hamas. Holding signs saying, El Qassam Brigade, your next target, pointing at Jewish students. So here you have it. While U.S. citizens are being held hostage in Gaza by Hamas and by the Islamic Jihad, you have students at Columbia University and faculty at Columbia University who are cheering on Hamas. Whoa. They are denied. And the administration, Columbia's administration, not only won't do anything about it, they are refusing to let the NYPD in. They are letting the terrorists in and keeping the NYPD out. So my message is not to the cowards at Columbia's administration. My message is to the mayor. We don't need your empty remarks about not being okay. Yes. Right now, we are not okay.
That is a Jewish professor at Columbia University. If you've seen these images, it is disgusting what is being allowed to participate or to take place at Columbia University right now in the face of Jewish people who do not feel safe on the campus with which they are students or professors. Why? Simply because of who they are as people. Simply because of who they are as people. I mean, we have had a lot of protests, a lot of civil rights conversations in this country about not treating people because of who they are as people in this kind of a way. But here we are in 2024, and it's disgusting. Here is a video and an audio of Michael Rappaport, who is not the guy who I would expect to be out there saying this, but the truth is that maybe I need to learn a little bit more about Michael Rappaport. Maybe I'm the ignorant one for not understanding a little bit more about him, but I am learning. I am hearing him. He is in New York City, and he comes out in front of a press pool of microphones and surrounded by people in NYC.
Speaking outside Columbia University in favor of Israel protesters. Watch.
Their race, their religion, their sexuality in this city. It's an embarrassment. And like I said, if these people were screaming at any other group of people, this would be taken care of. I'm wishing everybody a happy, happy, safe Passover. I'm wishing everybody to pray, to think, to meditate, to scream, yell, beg if you need be for the freedom of our hostages. I'm Israel High.
And then they cheer him and he walks away. But I mean, he's there and he's participating and he's doing what he needs to do to say, no, this is absolutely not okay. And somebody needs to speak up and say it. And I applaud him for being one who would do that. I wonder what Bill Maher has to say about this.
Now, then there's the people who don't want Israel to get any money. That's the pro-Palestinian protesters. They have been out this weekend. They were closing down bridges in San Francisco, New York, several other cities. That's their new thing, bridges. Get on the bridge and stop people from getting across the bridge. And the people are all saying, I'm trying to get on the bridge. Where is a drifting cargo ship when you need one?
All right, so there's one solution for the matter. Bill Maher out there saying this about people who are, I mean, like, if everything in the world comes down to red versus blue, Bill Maher is still team blue, right? He's never said that he's not a Democrat. He's criticized significantly what the Democratic Party has been doing here, especially under Joe Biden. I don't think that that's the solution. I hope that you don't think that's the solution, but the irony in his comment there and the laugh that he gets makes me think that a lot of people are sick and tired of the disruption that is being not just permitted, but entertained in this country, as if there's some sort of patriotic obligation to allow these morons to shut down bridges so that everybody else's life has to be disturbed. That's not how it works. Ron DeSantis commented.
Well, first on what's happening in these college campuses, you know, if I were in charge, I would send the Justice Department after those universities because this is unacceptable to have this type of anti-Semitism where it's not just bad speech. They're really targeting Jewish students. It's a hostile environment and violates the civil rights of those students. And these universities, they just aren't willing to do what needs to be done.
Where is the action? We already did this. We did this in 2020. We watched as a political movement swept the country and destroyed the country. We've gone through this. There's no requirement to sit idly by while these people do things to destroy our way of life, to impede our ability to drive from point A to point B on a bridge. And in what world do we live in if Columbia University is being taken over by people who make Jewish people afraid to show their faces? There is a video. I don't know, Brad, if I sent this to you or you might have sent this to me. I think it was in the UK. And there was a pro-Palestinian rally taking place. And do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, is this with the police?
The police are talking to a man who is wearing a yarmulke and he is presenting as Jewish. Why? Because he's Jewish. This is who he is. This is his religion. This is what we fight in the United States of America to protect when we say freedom of religion. Not freedom from a religion, I mind you, but freedom of religion. And the police in the UK were saying, like, you can't be here. And the reason he couldn't be there is because he looked Jewish.
Yeah.
It was outrageous. He goes, these people are going to attack you and I'm not going to be able to protect you. That was the message of that video. There are people in the United States of America who attend Columbia University right now and they present as Jewish, or maybe somebody could just assume that they're Jewish. Imagine that. And then they're not safe. Why are we not in an uproar? I mean, I wasn't there in the early to mid 1930s, but I've read enough about it. Why are we not screaming from the rooftops to knock this crap off? It's outrageous to me. I think it's outrageous to a lot of people. And any comparisons that are being made to the motive behind, like the emotion behind what took place in 2020 with those protests, comparing it to right now, this is a very different animal. This feels very different from the outside looking in. And I don't think that any of us should sit idly by and keep quiet, because we need to be vocal. We need to reestablish in this country what is acceptable behavior and what is not acceptable behavior. I am not interested in seeing another bridge be shut down for any length amount of time. You talk about that video that you sent me. Oh, my hand! Yes, sir, he's squirting my hand. He's squeezing my hand.
So this is a little behind the scenes. We were watching whenever the Golden Gate Bridge was blocked off. We were watching that and be like, why don't the police just remove these people from the bridge and get traffic going again? Well, they had barrels filled up with, I don't know if it was cement or sand, with PVC pipe in it. And in the PVC pipe, they had chained themselves to rebar within the PVC pipe, so you couldn't just pick them up and move them without moving these 55-gallon drums. Well, the police had to cut the rebar. And like in this video, you can see this protester's hand in there.
Like through the PVC pipe.
Yeah, through the PVC pipe, holding on to the rebar. The police go in with bolt cutters, cut the bottom part of this piece of this bar.
Did they cut his hand?
No.
Okay.
They don't even.
His hand was okay?
Yeah, it was separated by the PVC pipe, you know? And so then they start twisting the bar to see if it's loose. And they're like, yeah, it's loose. And he's like, ah, you're cutting my hand.
And the whole time this is happening, was it the drum?
The
plastic drum? Like, the protester is on the other side of this drum.
Right.
But you can see exactly what's happening with this video. Smart on them to video this. But, like, they're not even touching the hand. There's nothing even happening by the hand. But on the other side, this protester's like, he's hurting my hand! My hand! Oh, my God! It hurts! I
need medical assistance!
No, you need mental assistance.
So finally, they move the bar out, and they're like, yeah, he's free. You can pull his arm out. And so they pull him out. And you hear somebody right as the video is about to cut off. They're like, do you need to see medical? Yes, I do.
Wah.
What a wuss.
Take him away. I can't handle it. What are they protesting? On the Golden Gate Bridge in New York City at Columbia University. I mean, what they're actually protesting is not possible. The only way that they could get what they want is for the people like Hamas to get what they want. They want to end Jewish people. They want to end Israel. That is not a two-state solution.
No.
That's a one-state solution. There was a ceasefire on October 6th. Hamas broke it. Hamas wants to take care of business, and they're going to try to do it again if they're not eradicated.
The people of Gaza had self-governance, and they elected Hamas. They put Hamas in power. Israel pulled out in like 2005. Israel did not have a presence in the Gaza Strip.
You want to liberate the people of Gaza? You need to liberate them from Hamas. Just like Amy said, do you need medical attention? Yes. Call the wambulance. Do it. They should do that. And then they should have like a circus ambulance come up
with the clowns. Put them on the stretcher and actually fall and dump them out.
Oh, pick them up again. You're on a bridge. Don't trip. I just can't. I can't stomach it. I can't. The foolishness of what this country has sat by. We have, you know, remember when we were, you remember when like the phrase political correctness first came on? Mm-hmm. Do you remember? I mean, this all happened while we were coming of age. And there are things that we grew up probably at times saying and definitely hearing that I would feel inappropriate hearing now and saying now. Like, we grew out of saying those words. The R word was a very commonly used insult to people. I don't see any purpose in using it. I don't think that the First Amendment needs to be tossed out to protect or to stop people from saying it. But I feel like if you say that word in that type of a pejorative way, that somehow or another, I get to judge you for that now. And we have societally come together to say, that's just not acceptable. That's not culturally acceptable anymore. And if you decide to speak that way, you will be judged as such. Okay, fine. We went through a PC time where certain things changed a little bit. Where we are today, we are all so frozen in time. When we see things that are ridiculous, when we see people coming, shaking their fists in our face, threatening us, should we stand up for something that we believe to be morally, culturally right? And we see things that are morally, culturally wrong. If you dare open your mouth, you will pay, and you will pay, and you will pay until you've got nothing left. That's the society that they have tried to put us into. And a lot of people are very gun shy. We're frozen in time. Fight, flight, or freeze. We've been frozen. Now it's time to figure out one of the other things to do. We need to fight back because we cannot sustain a culture that is going to be one we want to raise our kids in for generations to come. And all of these people around this country protesting, like the ones in Colombia, they want to destroy this country, not build up another one. Let's take a quick break. Let's talk about the poll question when we come back.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.